Lone Pine, California, August 3rd, 1983. This tape shall be regarded as my final tape, that although there is the possibility that I may produce some more. I propose in this tape to give something of a review of the work that has been done here and formerly with my first wife, Sharifa. But I shall develop some phases more completely than other phases. I was married to Sharifa in the earlier part of this century. We were at the time at Halcyon, California, associated with the Temple of the People, which was headed by Dr. Dower and Mrs. Ladue, the latter being known as Blue Star, the former as Red Star. While we were there, the one known as Blue Star finally terminated. After that, we left the Temple of the People and started on our own work. A great deal of this was in the form of public speaking. I did a great deal of platform work myself, and Sharifa specialized on work with the individual students and in class work. I developed different statements on the platform, most of them centering around the body of teachings generally known as the wisdom religion or theosophy. This phase of the work continued up to August 7, 1936. At that time, an event occurred which was of supreme importance and made a radical change in our activities. To render understandable the bearing of this event, I shall have to revert to certain background material. I had somehow received a volume by Paul Deussen dealing with a subject matter that introduced the name of Sri Shankara Acharya. Paul Deussen's book, The System of the Vedanta, is based upon the Brahma Sutras of Sri Shankara Acharya. Now a word needs to be introduced as to the place occupied by Shankara, and I shall do so at this time. In my evaluation, the three leading spiritual figures of historic time are Buddha, Shankara, and Christ. There are other figures in earlier time of which we do not have clear knowledge, as they are pre-historical. The Brahma Sutra commentaries on the Brahma Sutras were produced by Shankara, and Doyson's book was a presentation of this material. One thing I discovered that was rather astonishing was that I would often read portions that seemed extremely familiar. I would start a sentence and knew what was coming before I read it. The material was the most valuable, from my point of view, I had ever found in this life. Inasmuch as the name of Shankara may not be familiar to many in the present audience, I shall at this time take the time necessary to introduce Shankara. This involves going back to the work of the great Buddha, namely Gautama Buddha. He was resisted in his work in India by the Brahmin caste, and the followers of Buddha were often persecuted by the Brahmins. It is reported that he took this position, that he would come to the Brahmins, though they had sinned in their persecution of his disciples. For this purpose, he appeared not in his own proper person, but transferred his intermediate principle to a given entity that was later to be known as Shankara, so that in a certain sense, Shankara was Buddha returned. But not simply that, because Shankara was another entity. And this was an entity of outstanding mental brilliance. To come to an appreciation of this mental brilliance, I shall give a brief account of the life of Shankara, which is exceedingly incredible. Now the story goes this way. It begins when Shankara returns to his mother's home at the age from the teachers where he is in process of being educated. He returned at the age of 7, having learned everything that the Brahmins could teach. He himself was of the Brahmanical caste. It is said that after returning, he had a call to the Guru and asked his mother if he could leave and go to his Guru. That would mean his spiritual teacher. But she thought that at the age of 7, he was far too young to be off alone by himself, so she did not give permission. But he had certain occult powers. One day, in a stream that passed their house, he produced the maya of a crocodile holding his leg in the crocodile's mouth, and he called to his mother and said, "This crocodile will not let go unless you give me permission to go to the Guru." Under those circumstances, she gave the necessary permission. Then Shankara departed, cutting across fields in a bee line to his Guru. He seemed to know where that Guru was, but it is said in the account of his life that he found the Guru to be, who is known to us as Patanjali, in a state of deep samadhi, trance. There also was a rain falling, and Shankara, who had powers, was born with powers, stopped the rain. Presently, the Guru came out of his state of samadhi and knew what had happened. Now it seems that he had been told that his greatest disciple would become evident by the manifestation of special powers, and he realized what had happened, that this 7-year-old child had stopped the rain, thereby demonstrating unusual occult power. He was accepted by the Guru, known as Patanjali, and remained with his Guru for 4 years, having experienced in that time 4 major realizations or enlightenments. At the end of this period, he was released by the Guru, having assimilated everything that the Guru could teach him. And he was at last, at a very young age, on his own, not more than 11 or 12 years old. He gave his first sermon in Benares and began picking up disciples at this early age of 11 years. Later, when he had reached the age of 16, he was writing a book on a stream that flowed in the vicinity. And this book was the one that came to be known as the Commentaries on the Brahma Sutras. He traveled north and south, east and west in India with his disciples, and ultimately founded four mathams, or monasteries, at least some of which are active to this day. At the age of 33, the intermediate principle of the Buddha, which had been transferred to him for his work, was withdrawn by the Buddha, presumptively, and his own intermediate principle was returned to him, and he was on his own. But this was equivalent to an enormous shock, for he had been accustomed to be moving on the level of supreme brilliance, and now found himself relatively stupid. This he was unable, or at least thought himself unable, to endure. So it is said, he entered a cave and has never been seen since. It is intimated that he withdrew the life principle in that cave and thereby acquired the guilt of suicide. And this invoked a penalty, which it is said consisted of an incarnation in which he would be killed against his will . And this leaves one to wonder, who was the entity who experienced death against his will at the age of 33, the age at which Shankara had committed suicide? Before this event, however, Shankara had been writing his masterpiece, The Commentaries upon the Brahma Sutras, it is said, on the banks of the Ganges. There was a Brahmin scholar who was working with him. And he wanted this scholar, who was also an artist, to decorate the book with artistic drawings. But for that purpose, this scholar would have to become one of his followers. And as Shankara was a rigorous ascetic and accepted only ascetic followers, implied that he would have to separate himself from his wife. But it is said that the wife did not agree to this offhand, but insisted that there should be a trial of powers. It was arranged that there should be a public argument of the relative merits of the ascetic path and the householder path, Shankara representing the ascetic path and the husband or Brahman representing the householder path. And the judge of the debate was to be the wife of the householder. One could hardly imagine a situation more tilted in a way unfavorable to Shankara. But he accepted the terms. However, his argument was so thoroughly sound, so obviously powerful and transcending the work of the husband and the wife, that she had to give the palm of victory to him, thereby losing her husband. There had been an earlier event that is of considerable importance. Shankara made it a rule to answer all questions that came to him. But the wife of this Brahman had asked him one question, which he as a teenager and an ascetic could not answer. And that was the question, what is the meaning of conjugal love? Shankara asked for 30 days to get the answer to the question, which was granted. And he went forth with his disciples until he found a body resting upon a funeral pyre, which was about to be burned. It proved to be the body of a Raja who out on a hunting expedition had been killed. Shankara saw that the body could be reanimated, and this he did by departing from his own body, leaving it in a state of catatonic trance and to be cared for by his disciples while he entered into the body of the Raja, who came alive at that moment, much to the delight of his followers. Shankara was taken by the followers to his home, which was a royal castle. There he found that the Raja had two wives, and it is by relations with these two wives that he learned the answer to the question that had been asked him. But meanwhile, he had forgotten who he was, and he continued with the problems of a Raja in the ruling of a principality. Now, he proved to be a much wiser man than the old Raja had been. And the people who belonged to the court soon realized what had happened. And they sent forth a commissioned body to slaughter anybody found in a catatonic trance, so that this entity, whoever he was, would be locked in to the Raja's body. But meanwhile, the disciples had removed that body so that it was not easy to find. Shankara proceeded to forget who he was and took up the problems of government. Meanwhile, the disciples had become concerned, and so they sent forth members of themselves as minstrels, appearing at various courts. The certain minstrels arrived at the place where Shankara was, and in their production of entertainment, they told the story of what had been happened. This aroused the memory of Shankara. He suddenly realized whom he was, and he then and there dropped the body of the Raja, who this time remained dead, and returned to his own in just the nick of time. He returned and gave the answer to the wife of the Brahmin, and then wrote a brief statement on the nature of conjugal love, which is said to be a classic to this day. Shankara was, in one sense, one of the clearest formulators of the Dharma. In my opinion, the clearest of all. His was a great intellectual mind. Buddha did not manifest supreme intellectual capacity. It is said that he formulated a way which was more a way of life that was favorable to the breakthrough to fundamental realization. And he acquired many followers, among them men of superior ability. And these individuals produced several Buddhistic sutras that have existed down to our day. There developed a fundamental cleavage or division in the Buddhistic system, one known as the Hinayana, or the Little Path, and one as the Mahayana, or the Great Path. The Little Path was exported out of India into Ceylon and into southeastern Asia. The Mahayana Path developed north of India and produced several forms that developed in China, in Japan, where ultimately Zen Buddhism emerged, and most important of all, certain forms of his Dharma in Tibet. And much of this has come down to our day. Now in my own case, I have found Shankara as by far the clearest exponent of the Dharma. He may be classed as a great intellectual. I have found him intellectually clear all the way. Not so in most of these other sutras. He used language that was highly rational, whereas many of the sutras use a language that is not clear to the rational thinker. I shall give an example. There is one sutra which runs this way. The Dharma, the truth, is not A, and it is not not A. It is not neither A nor not A. It is not both A or not A. And I depart from that statement with no enlightenment, no intelligible understanding, no feeling of having learned anything. We find nothing like that in Shankara. But there is one implication, that the Dharma, which has its root in the Blessed One, had developed in many directions, reaching the needs of many types of minds. There is one very fundamental division between what is known as the Hinayana and the Mahayana. The Hinayana developed south of India in Ceylon and in Southeast Asia. The Mahayana in the more northern part of Asia, particularly in Tibet, but including China and Japan, where a very weird form developed in a kind of radical, irrational form of Buddhism. But for me, I think of myself as oriented to that path which was pioneered by the great Buddha in the form as interpreted by Sri Shankaracharya. And the implication here is that the power, whatever it was, that lay behind this movement was not opposed in principle to rational intelligibility or to craziness of formulation, as in Zen Buddhism, but rather adapted itself to the understanding of various peoples, meeting them in the state where they now are, and leading them on to to that goal, which we know as fundamental realization or enlightenment. When I left the university, I did not complete my academic work to a full degree. I felt the pull of the search in the mystic way. After a year of teaching mathematics at Stanford during the sabbatical leave of Dr. Blickfeld, I left and went south of Carmel into the wilderness area there for a time. Later, I went on to Halcyon, and from there, after marriage, continued public work for some years, until in 1936, a major event took place, which is of central importance for this life of my own and for the work and writings that I have put forth. This is, as I say, of central importance. One day, when we were not out on lecture work and were at our home, a house that I had built in San Fernando, I had been reading in Paul Deussen's system of the Vedanta. I found this work extraordinarily intelligible. I often would start a sentence and know what was coming before I read it. On one of those days, I felt a call to read the section devoted to liberation. I was sitting in the backyard on a cement platform and at a table with an umbrella, large umbrella over it. I read through the section on liberation and felt that it was unusually clear. I went over to a porch swing to meditate upon that which I had just read. And while sitting there, it suddenly dawned upon me that there was nothing to be attained, that I am already that which I seek. And at that moment, I gave up the search. But then, wonder of wonders, the heavens seemed to open, and there descended down upon me enormous pearls of wisdom, far beyond my capacity to assimilate. And with that wisdom, the experience of the utmost of beauty, wisdom, and delight. This was beyond all expectation. utter beauty, utter sweetness, utter richness of knowledge. And they sat bewitched. I sat for a long time, and then proceeded to return to the normal consciousness, which I succeeded in doing quite easily, and found that my body had almost perished. It was drained, utterly empty, but not quite. I returned, but I found I had to reduce the intensity of the experience. And then I began to reduce it more, until finally that body could endure this abundance of the Supernal. I have learned since that there are realizations known in India that cause death in 3 days. And this I can understand, for we're dealing here with powers far beyond the resources of an animal body. That one could well depart in a flame of golden glory, much to his delight. But this thought remains. The redemption of one is much less than the redemption of the whole of humanity. Shall I enjoy this supreme richness of supernal knowledge and delight, while others shall continue agonizing in this mundane order? I could not forget. And so, I renounced the release that was there offered to continue with this humanity. For 10 days, I delighted in this supernal wisdom, beauty, and delight, glorying in it, learning from it, exalted by it. And then one day, the sage spoke to me. He suggested that I write it down so that men may know of the way that is available to them. And thus was born the book known to you as Pathways Through to Space. For 101 days I wrote at the typewriter day after day, further richnesses falling upon and about me, until finally it tapered off and the book was finished. From that event, the present work, which at first was the work of Sharifa and myself, was born, and which later was continued by Gertrude and myself. And now today, the cycle is drawing to a close. The work has been done. How worthy it may be, others will have to judge. But I can say it is the best that I could do. And I'm happy that this should have been the work of this life.